Well, we are live now, and normally I've been able to talk to my regular audience for some time before we join the folks at the 10 o'clock hour. For the last hour, they've been watching I don't know what they're watching, but included in the watching's a crawl that said I'm on my way to be live. I was actually here, I think, about 4 or 5 minutes after 9. I need that first hour with my regulars to get our work out of the way. We're at 207, for example, and it's Thursday night, so we have 93 to go, and tonight and tomorrow to do it. But then I had to deal with something, and been in the waiting area dealing with it for 55 minutes. So we would not normally I'm talking to the audience that's been with us. We would not normally just play music and whatever TBCs they were playing and run a crawl that I'm on my way for an hour. I don't live that far away. We'll make that clear. People that are looking for me, it's not quite an hour from here. So you can narrow your search. That clear?
Yes, sir.
So that means that you regulars got to do what? I feel like throwing a handkerchief at that TV and saying, why can't you do what I want you to do before I think of it? Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Because you all know what you're supposed to be doing as the regulars every single night. Most of you have kids. I don't want to over-identify in the sense Paul said you have many teachers but only one father. And in a sense, the majority of the congregation, as Paul, who brought the message, was their spiritual father. In that sense, I'm the spiritual father of most of the people in my congregation, because you had turned off on God and the church and found faith renewed here through the teaching that I do. But I do get tired of you acting like children. Any of you parents ever get tired of telling your kids the same thing day in, day out, from morning, noon, and night? Huh? How many get tired of doing that? How many have that experience? The rest of you probably lying. Or don't have any kids. How many of you were kids that had to be told? And that gets the rest of you. Well, at least you parents got a little pleasure out of what produced your problem. I didn't. Just remember that when you continue to lay that problem on me. I'm tired of having to tell you what to do every night and trying to disguise it. I'm tired of having to whip the kids and not let the guests know it. You know, at times I just feel it'd be much better to get an M16 and spray everybody at random. You know what you have to do. I didn't have the last hour to tell you. I've been bringing in here boxes and boxes of books every night, thinking we were going to reach this goal and I can take off. I've tried so many different times to finish some of the subjects. I don't know if I'll succeed this time, but I'm feeling a stirring, because some of you are more interested in some subjects than others, and you listen for hours waiting for your favorite subject, and I never get on it. Or when I do, you're not listening. So I'm praying and thinking and organizing all my research material for another stab at some of the foundational subjects that undergird this ministry and makes it different from other ministries. We're not scared by UFOs. The Bible had them. So what? I'm not worried if there's life on other planets. I still think God's the boss of all of them. as long as I'm okay with him. I ain't worried about little men that bleed green. I'm quite sure that God's not as happy with them as he is with us if they execrate through their skin. Or so the stories go on some UFO, particularly out of Project 13, that secret one of the Blue Book publications that claims that not only have UFOs crashed, but some have been the entities in them have been captured, some alive as well as dead. They have no genitals, they have no anal tract. They execrete through their skin. They apparently don't eat what we eat, and they give off some horrendous odors. I thought you'd like to know that tonight. Now, you that are so curious about UFOs and their denizens, you've got a great new market for brute. I mean, I can tell you guys that the brute ain't the end thing. So, you know, peddle it to that bunch. They need something over strong like that. You that are interested in UFOs, I thought I'd pick a night that we deal in part with strange things, from UFOs to the reproduction of the zodiac and the waterways and configurations around Glastonbury that can only be seen from a great distance in the air. Just as amazing as those vast, giant figures on the high altiplano of the Andes in the South American part of this hemisphere, particularly the one that is a perfect representation in giant size, only capable of being seen if you're out there, or if there was a mirror image from which they could construct. And here on the high altiplano of South America is a perfect and giant size reproduction of a spider that's so rare there's probably less than 30 of them that exist, identifiable because its sex organs is in its leg, and here thousands of miles from the Amazon jungle where this spider has its habitat, it's perfectly reproduced in a giant size on the high plateau. Such strange subjects as the Mandan Indians, the blonde, blue-eyed Indians of the North Dakotas that surprised everybody. There are others that are interested in the what I'm tying into the Sunday preaching on the Celts and the Lost Tribes. And it's been a long time since we have explored Barry Fell's research on the Celts in the Americas, long before Columbus got here. I mean, I'm almost sorry that I'm part Cherokee Indian because they're being so idiotic. I mean, there's some things they get carried too far. I mean, they want to change the Atlanta Braves and the Redskins. I mean, they're making a racial issue out of it. When you can no longer laugh at yourself, you really have got a problem. The whole world is taking themselves too frickin' serious. But Columbus did not discover America. Don't go telling me that he taught the American Indians how to be brutal. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, just because somebody kills more of one bad bunch than the bad bunch was able to kill of the second bad bunch, they're both bad bunches, and don't let the kettle call the pot black. The American Indians were not a bunch of saints. There were a few saints, but they weren't made to become what they were, and I'm tired of this baloney. And I have enough Cherokee Indian blood in me to get away with it, so you have to get off my back. I choose not to live on a reservation. If you do, shut up. And you ain't coming in here and taking my property from me or making me do penance for fights that were had 3 centuries ago. I don't give a hoot about it. Get your asteroid out in the street and learn to live. Don't give me your penance. I said the same thing to Jesse Jackson. Not personally, I'd like to. When he was parading around, marching into churches and asking churches to pay for slavery. I wasn't there. I know enough about churchmen that hid slaves to not get on the defensive about churches. Power corrupts, absolute power corrupts, absolutely. I don't care what your color of skin. If there's more of you and you got there first, you'll be mean to the second bunch. And if you're the second bunch and you're bigger and stronger than the first bunch, you'll be mean to the first bunch. That's sin. And nothing to do with the color of skin. If you ain't a sinner, you probably ain't part of mankind. You got a real problem. And Christ came to redeem sinners and to give us all new life. That's His life. And since all the colors come from Him, it sort of diffuses that issue. Deal with the problems now and quit trying to make the present pay the penalty for the past. I don't think modern Germany should continue to do penance for the Holocaust. Racist Germans today should get their comeuppance. Germans that have not yet demonstrated they're racist, that were born long after Hitler was dead, shouldn't have to pay any penalty for Hitler. I'm just really tired of all this crap, and I do my own little thing of speaking out about it. I'm tired of being brainwashed by people that got some new kick to get excited about every 10 years. Now you can't even treat a woman like a woman. I'm really getting mad because women still treat men like men. Maybe I don't want to be treated like a man anymore. But that's ludicrous. But women, they don't want to be treated like women anymore. Well, open your own damn door then. Get your own damn chair. Buy your own damn flowers and get your own damn perfume. Pay me alimony. I'm older than you and I can't work anymore. You take care of me. I don't know which night I'll be on that subject, but what I'm trying to say is there's got to be one night I can talk about anything. Another night on the pyramids. Tonight I came prepared to talk about Atlantis. If you'll get the job done, I would like to finish some of the subjects I started before Jesus comes or before I die. Now, 15 years ago, I thought I was going to live forever, so I didn't really care so much that I didn't finish some subjects. The death of my father gave me a new sense of mortality, and in case Jesus tarries, I'd like to finish. And you're keeping me from finishing because you don't finish your job every week. Thursday, and we got 207. We don't have 307 but tonight. Now, I think I've done a pretty good 16-minute job of not bawling my people out while I bawled them out. So get on the telephone and use the next 14 minutes, and maybe I can have some teaching time tonight. Get on the telephone and get the job done. Somebody call from El Paso. Listening on Channel 11, they think. I don't think it's 11. I think it's Channel 48 out of Las Cruces, but you're probably listening on a cable channel. I saw this program a few weeks ago on a channel when I was in New Mexico. I couldn't sleep tonight, so I got up and turned on my TV, and there you were again. Where's your church? The Los Angeles University Cathedral. You'll see pictures of it all the time when the music is playing. How long have you been on? Only a week. This week started last Saturday in your area. Don't really know how long in New Mexico. 16 years on television from Los Angeles. I'm going to start right out on Atlantis. I got about a third of my library here. I think somewhere between 5,000 and 10,000 books have been written on Atlantis. I've called out some of the best ones. The Bible teaches superior civilizations of the past. And man has gone downhill, primarily through cataclysms. There was a great cataclysm that struck the earth when Lucifer was cast from the heavens. Lucifer was in Eden before his fall. The Bible makes that clear. Genesis 1, 2, and onward is a recreative work, not a new work. Which I always point out is why God said, let us, or said to them, replenish the earth. Having said, let us make man in our own image. And literally he said, let us make Adam in our own image. Which doesn't rule out other kinds of man-like creatures evolving. Adam was a new thing. And then he told Adam and Eve to replenish the earth. The flood of Noah was cataclysmic. There ain't no way, though Joshua described the event as he perceptually saw it. The Bible not being written as a scientific document, but honestly recording the perceptions of the people who saw it, to Joshua the sun stood still. We know that was his perception of it, but it was the longest day in history up to that point and any point since. And there ain't no way. There ain't no way that that event occurred without cataclysmic things in nature happening in various parts of the earth. And any such event where the day is lengthened and the sun appears stayed in its course means something's happening to the earth. Shifting its axes or something. It's going to affect a lot of things. As Velikovsky said, there had to be confirmation in various parts of the world for the cataclysmic events related to the Exodus and the deliverance of the Israelites out of Egypt. The Bible teaches that. It teaches cataclysmic speeded up, destructive happenings on the earth, and start over time is on the horizon again. The Bible teaches that superior people lived in the past and we got worse and we're just now starting to get better. There has not been a straight line curve of improvement in mankind that evolution teaches. I'm not worried about evolution. I'm much more intrigued with the fact that Darwin stole the idea from another poor fool that shared it with him. I mean, that was a hard luck guy if I ever saw him. He spends years in Brazil, produces the greatest analysis of the insects and the life of the Amazon jungle, and he's lost in a shipwreck. And he comes up with the origin of species idea and is laying on a sick bed near death in the East Indies, having shared it with Darwin, and Darwin plagiarizes and beats him to the Royal Society with it. I mean, that to me is more interesting than fighting over creationism versus evolutionism. Creationism does not rule out evolutionism. Evolution may rule out creationism, and that means that it's a stupid evolutionist. And they long ago abandoned that our ancestors swung from trees by their tails. And everybody knows that they constructed a lot of fake fossil men. And you don't really prove much about the origin of man by a little piece of a jawbone, which is about all they had in one case. But I'm not bothered by evolution. Atlantis, to me, is the best explanation of the world before the flood. The canopy theory explains to me why there was no rain. Now, the problem with science is they're just about as wooden-headed, in some cases, as religionists. If they're still living in the medieval period of scientific analysis that bases everything on the presupposition, which is an article of faith, that all things happen and always have happened the same way they're happening now. I mean, sex doesn't even happen the same way now that it used to happen. At least it shouldn't. You ought to be scared spitless. I mean, virginity is coming back in the vogue. Even there you can't be safe. And this talk about safe sex or any such thing. It's only safer and not so safe. That's another subject, and I will not dedicate a night a week to that subject. These other things I will. Atlantis intrigues me. And everybody else, a lot of other people have been intrigued because it's, as I said, more than 5,000 books by four. And I got them stacked up here, but I'm gaining an appreciation of these Time Life books. They've hired some good writers. And one of the things I don't like about musicians is that they play for musicians. And it's just a hodgepodge. Oh, one or two or three or four. Lawrence Welk, he played for people and got rich. Engineers, they talk engineering buzzwords and would make a TV network go broke if you let them have their way. They're overgrown teenagers playing with million-dollar tinker toys. And everything that they put up, they read the next magazine and they got to have something new because science is moving that fast. Even the movies are going to pop with the spatial effects people. You don't even need a story anymore. You just think up, what can you say between this effect and the last effect? And some scholars bother me. You know, it's like they think there's some virtue in talking about mysterious things in mysterious ways. I'll credit Time Life. They've taken, they oversimplify. They're wrong in lots of their conclusions because they're trying to cover so much. But to start a subject, Berlitz and Time Life popularize the subject and tell it to a general audience real fast. So to introduce it, I'm going to Time Life tonight and Berlitz, and then I'll, if we can stay on the subject on this Thursday night, which I'd like, if you allow me, to dedicate to Atlantis and antediluvian subjects, particularly who those sons of God were that came down and mated with the women on earth and whether or not they produced bodily dispossessed spirits that are looking for people to possess and all those other subjects. I'm really tired beating on you. Well, we're tired of it too. Well, then produce, because I'm going to keep beating until you produce. But maybe I can squeeze some of this in. On April 12, 1939, A 62-year-old man sank into a trance-like state and spoke of the last days of a long-lost world. And anybody that writes Edgar Cayce off as not for real, like Nostradamus, not everything he said came true and not everything he said was true. But Edgar Cayce is a phenomenon not to be dismissed and not to be ignored. He's not to be worshipped, and neither are his words to be taken as sacred text. But Edgar Cayce is one of the most amazing men that ever lived. And this is the 62-year-old man who sank into a trance-like state and spoke of the last days of a long-lost world. If his thoughts were disjointed, his meaning was as clear as it was startling. In Atlantis, he said, when there was the breaking up of the land, came to what was called the Mayan land, or what is now Yucatan, entity was the first to cross the water in the plane or air machine of that period. Disjointed sentence, to be sure. But it presupposes an Atlantis that was breaking up, came to what was called the Mayan land, or what is now Yucatan, entity, was the first to cross the water in the plane or air machine of that period. The speaker was Edgar Cayce, known as the sleeping prophet because he invariably experienced his visions in a seeming stupor. I don't care whether his visions came from demonic sources, good spirit sources, parapsychologically explainable sources, he's not to be ignored. And such a phenomenon, if you have a religious faith, it cannot be the ostrich head in the sand kind that fails to take into account evidence of this kind. I might say parenthetically, the circumstantial evidence for reincarnation abounds. I do not believe in reincarnation. I have another explanation for the evidence. And that's not the subject tonight, parenthetically. But I have too much respect for General George Patton and for many others who have studied the phenomenon and what is offered as evidence for individual reincarnation to disregard it. You either must believe in reincarnation or find another explanation. I choose another explanation. But to say there's no convincing evidence is because you haven't looked. Sorry, that's just as stupid as the people that deny the resurrection because they haven't looked. Resurrection of Christ. I'm in the business, so you know why I teach on these subjects. I'm in the business of demonstrating. You don't have to be closed in your mind or stupid or a freak to be a Christian. I did a PhD at Stanford University. I changed majors on every degree. You aren't going to tell me that paleontology does not demonstrate a sequential kind of layering of life that does give an evidence sequence for the hypothesis to explain that called evolution. I know the difference between the hypothesis. I know the hypothesis is not provable. It can only be evidenced in a relative way. But either God laid down the earth to create the impression so he could laugh at us while we fight about evolution, or some other theory to explain the fact. Paleontology is a fact. There is a sequential layering. And either God created the earth with the ability to speak and produce something with some of its carbon half-lives already wasted, and thus create an impression that he can say, ha ha, they figured this one out. Or this old earth is much older than Bishop Usher thought. And Bishop Arthur Usher was no paleontologist and knew about as much about geology as I do about curing AIDS. I may know more than he did, which is nothing. Nothing in the Bible says it's only that the earth was created 4,000 years B.C. Nothing in the Bible that denies previous civilizations and previous lives. Indeed, the Bible, as I've already said, makes it clear there was previous life on this earth. Satan, before he fell, was in Eden. In fact, he played up to his vanity and had his evil thoughts first in Eden. This earth has a vast amount of time between Genesis 1:1. In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and literally, in the beginning, gods. I accept the Nicene Creed. I'm smart enough to know I don't understand it, neither does anybody else. It's logically impossible. The Trinity cannot be explained in human terms. It's attempting to embrace a subject that's larger than man's conceptual ability. All I know is the Bible says, in the beginning Elohim, not El, didn't say in the beginning El, the God Most High. It said in the beginning Elohim, gods. Doesn't bother me because I know there's a lot of angels, and that's the way the Jews ultimately resolved it. There was one God above everything. They were monotheistic, not polytheistic. Therefore, their other gods were reduced to something less than a god. It was a semantical trick. They're not monotheist. They just monotheized the Top Gun. They continued to believe in hierarchies of angels and hierarchies of demons, which in terms of their ability as being supernatural makes them pretty godlike. We're just talking definitions. We're talking semantics. The reality is God had a lot of helpers. Now, the theologians debate the Trinity on the eternal existence and eternal equality of the three in one. I don't debate that. It's fine with me. I mean, I can agree with anything that nobody understands. I'm a historic churchman. Nobody ever threw me out of any church. I helped write the theology of two of them, major denominations. I did my doctoral dissertation on the theology of Reinhold Niebuhr, who was personally smarter than any of the liberals that he left and any of the fundamentalists that criticized him. Reinhold Niebuhr perhaps had a gestalt of world knowledge beyond any single man that ever lived. And he came back to neo-orthodoxy and to the Bible for the solution to man's problems, which is a bent towards sin, and to God is the only answer coming from beyond history to solve the problems of mankind. So I'm not some freak. I've been a historic churchman. Had Canon Brian Green lay his hands on me in the Anglican Church in the heart of Melbourne, Australia. I just am out here opening people's minds, letting them understand that God's bigger than all these problems and debates. And God's not necessarily going to look like you think he should look. If the only God you want to see is the one you see in the mirror every morning, what are you worrying about heaven or hell for? The speaker was Edgar Cayce. I know where I left off. Known as the sleeping prophet because he invariably experiences visions in a seeming stupor. For two decades, this enigmatic, unlettered American seer would astound listeners with confidently detailed pronouncements about the fabled island continent of Atlantis. Hailed as a greatly gifted clairvoyant and healer, Casey told of an ancient place that, before it was swallowed by the ocean, had produced technological marvels not to be seen again until the 20th century. He spoke of living men and women who, in earlier incarnations — he believed in incarnation, reincarnation, I don't, I have a different explanation — but he spoke of living men and women who in earlier incarnations had been citizens of this vanished continental nation. He recounted how citizens or survivors of the final cataclysm had fanned out by various means, some on board Atlantean aircraft, to bear remnants of their knowledge and achievements to nearly all the corners of the globe. To be sure, Casey painted an incredible picture. I'm reading no less than the Time Life book about mystic places. But that's just the beginning. To be sure, Casey painted an incredible picture, as one of his sons would later say of the Atlantis tales, quote, "They are the most fantastic, the most bizarre, the most impossible information in the Edgar Casey files." Another son, namesake Edgar Evans Casey, put it a different and more hopeful way. Quote, "Unless proof of the existence of Atlantis is one day discovered," he conceded, "Edgar Casey is in a very unenviable position. On the other hand, if he proves accurate on this score, he may become as famous an archaeologist or historian as he was a medical clairvoyant. However improbable they may appear, Casey's chronicles of Atlantis cannot fail to fascinate, for the lost continent remains tightly woven into the fabric of the human heritage, a land that has tantalized philosophers and poets, historians and schemers, scientists and explorers for more than two millennia. Ever since the Greek philosopher Plato described it in his writings 355 years before the birth of Christ. The story of Atlantis has spoken to generation after generation about the power and wisdom of the ancients. It is a recollection of Eden, of a paradise resting now in the dragon-green depths of the sea. Human ambitions may vault beyond the earth to the moon and planets and even to the most distant stars. But memories of that wondrous continent still persist, and not alone in the strange revelations of Edgar Casey. The world is filled with mysterious sites, regions, and structures that excite the imagination and lead to speculation about their origins and purposes. Some, such as Atlantis and the secret innards of the earth, are unseen, perhaps existing only in the minds of believers." And I don't know whether I'll get to the point or whether they mention it here, but he prophesied not only the happening, but the time to start looking for Atlantis to start rising from the sea. And that's when the explorers begin to find on the Caribbean shelf the evidence below water of an offshore massive intelligence-built structure. That comes later. There's the Great Pyramid of Cheops at Giza, a monument, they say, to an Egyptian god king. That's where they're off, certainly. But perhaps far more than that, most certainly, there are the awesome columns and archways of Britain's Stonehenge. Fascinating, I might say, not the least, because you connect the northwest and the southeast cornerstones and run a rum line between them and extend it right straight across the southwestern part of Europe, straight across the Mediterranean Sea, and it'll hit smack on the pyramid. But that's another subject. Awesome columns and archways of Britain's Stonehenge, built by unknown hands. I'm glad they recognize that. Some are trying to identify who built it. As a device for tracking the cycle of the sun, but possibly invested with other meanings too, and Bonnie Gaunt has found a timeline in Stonehenge that marks the birth and death of Christ, as does the pyramid. They also preserve that same measurement device, 1/500 millionth of the distance between the north and south pole through the center of the earth on its axis, as the American and British inch are connected to that measurement unit and mysteriously are preserved by the British and the Americans. Not like that inaccurate metric system that's based upon measuring from the pole to the equator across the uneven surface of the earth. But that's another subject. On the coastal desert of Peru, lengthy lines and vast figures of animals and human-like creatures have been etched into the arid ground, drawings that can best be seen in their entirety from high above. What do they signify? How, for that matter, did their makers even perceive them whole, since it requires getting up in a blimp or an airplane to see them? But what about Atlantis? If you want me to continue, get on telephone. Winsboro, Texas call. Said, when you were describing those aliens that execrete through their skins, I thought you were describing some of the people around here. Make his neighbors love him. I'm reading from Time Life, Mystic Places. Of all the mystic places, the most enigmatic and the source of many of the rest is the view of some people, or in the view of some people, is the lost island continent of Atlantis. The subject of more than 2,000 books, I'd correct that, more than 5,000, and countless articles and poems, Atlantis has been traced to a long list of sites and regions in the world. Among them, most of the oceans and continents, to mountain ranges such as the Atlas Mountains of North Africa, to deserts such as the Sahara, to islands such as Malta in the Mediterranean and Bimini in the Caribbean, to cities such as Carthage on the Gulf of Tunis and Cadiz in southwest Spain. All of those, plus others, have been named or proposed as sites for the lost civilization of Atlantis.
This is the end of Side 1.